This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
.org en los archivos de audio.
And with that, you are tuned to listener-supported, non-commercial, WBAI 99.5 FM at exactly midnight here in New York City. That was a rebroadcast of the evening news, con su edición en español informativo, which means that now, with any luck at all, it is time for this.
Moorish. Orthodox Radio Crusade Anarchism for the Global City Radical Environmentalism for the Concrete Jungle Esoteric Explorations of the Secret History of Rebel Culture The Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade Every Tuesday at midnight after the news, only on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Be there.
Thank you.
All right. Well, our astute listeners will have immediately recognized that riff, of course. That was Ante Balas, New York's own Ante Balas, recording probably quite a few years ago. This is on a new compilation called The Rough Guide to Latin Funk. And most of the contributors are from Cuba and Puerto Rico and elsewhere in the Caribbean. But there's some New Yorican stuff on it as well, including Ante Balas, which we just heard. And let's see, they call that song Che Che Cole Macosa. And once again, astute listeners will recognize it as we'll recognize the riff, where it comes from. It comes from Mano de Bongo's classic album, Sol Macosa, New Bell, from recorded in Cameroon in Africa back in the early 1970s, the same one that Michael Jackson got sued over ripping off. But Ante Balas, fortunately, did not get sued. So, we're opening up with some New York music because we're going to be talking about New York tonight on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. And this is, by the way, the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade on listener-supported, non-commercial, WBAI, 99.5 FM. I'm Bill Weinberg, and we're in the studio with some people from the Coalition to Protect Chinatown / LES, Lower East Side, which, as well as representing some other groups, right? Josephine Lee, let me see if I got your mics all up.
Hi, how are you?
One more time.
Hello, how are you?
Okay. And you're with Chinese Staff and Workers.
Yes, I am.
Which is a member of the Coalition to Protect Chinatown / LES.
Yes, it is.
Right. And David, too?
Yes. Hi.
Also with Chinese Staff and Workers, but also with the Coalition to Protect Sunset Park.
Exactly. Right.
So we got Brooklyn in the house as well. And finally, we've got Rob Hollander of which hat are you wearing, Rob?
Let's say Bowery Alliance of Neighbors tonight.
Oh, okay.
Right. But also Lower East Side Residents for Responsible Development.
Uh-huh.
And we're part of the coalition as well.
Also a part of the Coalition to Protect
Absolutely.
Chinatown / LES. Mm-hmm. And later, joining us by telephone is going to be someone else from Sunset Park.
Yeah, David Galarza, with the Sunset Park Alliance Neighbors, which is also part of the Coalition to Protect Sunset Park.
Great. Okay. So we'll be hearing from him in about a half an hour or so. Maybe we'll take another musical break at that point. I understand that there was a rather rowdy Community Board 3 meeting late last month, which I missed, unfortunately, because I was out in California. So
you missed the fireworks.
I missed the fireworks. It almost reminded me of the old days back in the 1980s with Tompkins Square and all that, when the community board meetings used to get really rambunctious.
Well, no one threw a pie in the face of the community board chair, but just about everything else, I think, happened that night.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there is quite a few people, probably more than 100 people showed up to express concern about the current rezoning plan that day.
Mm-hmm. And the rezoning plan does not extend to Chinatown. Is that the issue?
It's right now, it only protects to a certain extent the area from 13th Street, and then mostly to Delancey Street and just a few blocks down to Grand Street. But it leaves out the Bowery, leaves out mostly all of Chinatown and also the Latino community in the Lower East Side.
In other words, east of Avenue A.
From Avenue D east.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, most of Alphabet City then would be included in the...
Yes. It's the East Village,
mm-hmm.
up to Avenue D.
Right. Okay, well, on the other side of Avenue D, you've just got the projects.
That's right.
And,
That's right.
Right, so... There's not going to be any development going on there, at least not immediately anyway. Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then south of, it also excludes the Lower East Side south of Delancey Street.
Right.
As well.
So. Right, exactly. The old Lower East Side. The Lower East Side outside of what they started calling the East Village back, what, maybe 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're off to start diving right into zoning. And zoning, unfortunately, for a lot of people, is one of those words where you just say zoning and people's eyes kind of glaze over and they just think that you're one of these, urban infrastructure geeks. I was kind of heartened. I was kind of heartened that there was actually such a large presence at a community board meeting where people were talking about zoning. But perhaps you could sum up why listeners, and not just listeners in the Lower East Side or Chinatown, should be concerned about something as dry as zoning.
I think it's because the Department of City Planning, which does the zoning for the city, is really dedicated to the proposition that development should be everywhere. And they're basically in the business of clearing the ground for developers. They publicize it very differently. They make it seem as if they're doing something for the community, but when you look very carefully at what they're doing, it's really to bring some development. And what we're most concerned about here is not only what they're planning to zone in the East Village and Lower East Side, but also what they have stubbornly refused to include in the plan. And that worries us because we're seeing hotels being built along the Bowery.
We sure are.
On every side of Chinatown, there are hotels going up, and the zoning, the current zoning.
Big hotels, mind you.
Yeah,
right.
23 stories, 28 stories. These are luxury hotels. Sometimes you have these hotels that are actually sort of condo hotels, where something is built at a hotel, and then it'll turn into a condo a few years down the road.
And I understand the monstrosity which they're going to be building on my block. Is actually going to have a multiplex theater in it as well.
Ah, that's a new one for me. I hadn't heard that.
That's what the scuttlebutt is. Now, I confess that I have not been so rigorous about attending the community board meetings and so on myself, so I don't have a entirely clear picture of what's going on. But I do know that, the entire neighborhood, if we can continue to even call it a neighborhood, is changing at a very, very rapid pace.
Oh, for sure.
Starting to look more and more like the set of a 1950s science fiction movie with these big gleaming sky rises going up.
Yeah, the Cooper Square Hotel.
Yes.
Rising up like this big glass sail.
That's the one overlooking Astor Place, right?
That's right. Right. And it's just down the block from the Bowery Hotel,
right,
which went up a couple of years before it. Across the street from you is another, it's really not a hotel. It's going to be, I think, apartments. Rental apartments, but it's huge. It's much larger than anything on that block.
But which is the Bowery Hotel?
The Bowery Hotel is on, 4th Street. That's been there for, 2 years now. Big, tall structure. And right down the street from that is a Scorano development.
Mm-hmm.
Very exclusive. When you read the ads for it, they talk about a gated driveway and pristine gardens. And, this is on the Bowery, right? The Bowery is an old sort of skid row
It used to be, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And the thing about these luxury developments is that they're in a place where everything else is low-rise. So the views that you get there are really spectacular. That's what's drawing people down to the Bowery to live in this kind of luxury.
And, of course, it's ultimately going to be self-defeating because once they finish building all this stuff, the views are not going to be so spectacular.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, this is, of course, apart from contributing to the already rather agonizing problems with traffic, both foot traffic and car traffic, it's ultimately going to drive up real estate values and thereby rent.
That's what we're really scared about.
Yes.
Especially in a place like Chinatown. The scary thing about Chinatown is that it's zoned as a commercial zone, just like the Bowery where all these hotels are going up. So there's going to be nothing to prevent the hotels actually from going up in Chinatown. All they have to do is evict the people who are living there from the buildings there. Now, that's a really scary proposition. And not only do you have people being evicted to build a hotel, But once you have this kind of money in your neighborhood, you're going to lose the kinds of businesses that you used to have there, all the mom and pops, all the in Chinatown, it's all the restaurants. It's going to be replaced with a different kind of restaurant, a kind of, nightlife destination restaurant.
Right,
kind
well, this of thing. Is already well underway. I mean, you know, the mom and pop sort of wholesome family eatery type working class restaurants are almost completely gone from the Lower East Side. There's still plenty of them in Chinatown.
They're all replaced by banks and these trendy bars.
Yes, exactly.
But, I mean, the community board here, proposed this zoning for the East Village without
right,
really
is,
looking
this
to Chinatown.
Community Board 3, which includes both East Village and much of Chinatown.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, actually, Community District 3 goes from 14th Street all the way to the Brooklyn Bridge, and then west to the Bowery. And actually, the Asian population makes up the largest group in Community District 3. But then, you know, it's very questionable that they've carved out certain boundaries that distinctly leaves out the Chinese community. It leaves out the Latino community. The Latino population is almost the same as the white population in Community District 3. But that if you consider who's in the rezoning area from 13th to Delancey, then you see that about 60% or more of the people in the rezoning area are white. And very few of the Asian population or the Latino population is in the rezoning area. And one good thing about the rezoning area is that it does provide certain high caps that will keep the area from developing, you know, tall structures. To keep it from developing luxury housing, luxury hotels. But now you protect a certain area and you leave another area vulnerable to overdevelopment. So you're basically saying, we don't care about this area. Let all the hotels go there. Let all the luxury condos go there. Displace the people because we don't really want them there. And, you know, this is already happening. Overdevelopment is already a reality for our community because we see hotels being built every day around the corner from us. And, you know, every day goes by, we know that actually the zoning plan puts more pressure for development than not having it there at all. And I think right now, you know, DCP, you know, with the way they've carved out the boundaries.
Department of City Planning.
Yes, the Department of City Planning. I'm sorry. You know, it's very... it will put too much pressure on of development. But then at the same time, there's also other redevelopment plans going on besides rezoning in the area that, you know, are going to be very disastrous for the community. And this is a community that's mainly consists of small businesses, of low-income residents who make $25,000 or less. But it's a very viable community because, you know, the local community invests in the small business and, you know, invests in all the services that goes on. And it's actually a very prosperous community that's made of small business owners and, you know, workers and residents. And I think, you know, they've tried to put out a plan that says, you know, that Chinatown needs more tourism, that they, you know, that Chinese people love tall buildings, that they love gentrification, you know,
Who is saying this?
Well, at a community board meeting, actually, people have, you know, put that out, that Chinese people don't mind high density, that Chinese people don't mind tall buildings, you know, and I think it's very blatantly, you know, discriminatory because, it is true that while, you know, because people have such low income, sometimes they're forced to live 10 to 15 people to an apartment. But then when you start encouraging all the development to go to our community, people are going to be priced out of the community or either that or what are you saying to have people live 30 to an apartment? I mean, it's completely ridiculous right now, the trend or the pattern that's going on over here.
Yeah, the Department of City Planning tries to sweeten the deal by talking about offering affordable housing. But when you look at what the level of affordability is, it's actually not low-income housing. Much of it is middle-income housing, and basically none of it is affordable to the people who are living in that neighborhood.
And this is the so-called 80-20 formula?
Yeah, and even when it's more than 80-20, that is when it's more than just 20% of the development is affordable housing, like in Harlem. Harlem's plan now it was sold to the politicians up in Harlem as having 50% affordable housing, or what they now call income-targeted housing. But when you actually look at the numbers, the lowest level of affordable housing, so-called affordable housing there, is at 40% of the average income of New York, which is way higher than the average income of the people living in that community in Harlem on 125th Street. So basically, more than half of the community is going to be left out of this so-called affordable housing. And then they have several different tiers of so-called affordable housing, including 125% of the average income. That means, you know, people who are middle income in New York City, which is way, way above the income levels in Harlem. So basically, this affordable housing is really middle income housing for New Yorkers, mm-hmm. bringing in a completely different community. This is the affordable housing. Then there's also 50% of it, which is market rate housing.
Yes, yes, yes.
So they're talking about a complete transformation of the Harlem community.
50% of the what they've got planned for 125th Street.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But just to clarify, I believe 125% of the average median income, that's already more than $67,000 for a single person. And they're considering that for affordable housing. I mean, that's just, it's completely, you know, ridiculous. And I think the way that also under the Bloomberg administration, how city planning has tried to mislead people in saying that, you know, they're bringing in affordable housing to the city. I mean, under the 80-20 program, there's really no affordable housing given whatsoever. The 2080 program is not a viable program for people who live and work in the city. All it means is that you basically will price people out of the city. They're going to have to move elsewhere.
All right, let me ask you some questions about the zoning plan, which you're opposed to. First of all, what are the exact boundaries of it from 13th to Delancey, north to south, and what east to west?
It's just east of 3rd Avenue. So it doesn't include 3rd Avenue, but it does include all of 2nd Avenue,
uh-huh.
all the way to Avenue D.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a portion...
All right, so it significantly does not include Bowery, where all these new monstrosities are going up.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
And then south of Houston, there's a little stretch of about 9 blocks that you would be familiar with as the Orchard Street area,
mm-hmm.
the old Jewish Lower East Side area.
Right.
That's also included in this zoning. That's where all the hotels are. You know, if you go down to that neighborhood, you will see one 23-story hotel on each one of those blocks.
Okay, right, but you're saying that it is included in the...
It's included in this proposed zoning.
Okay, so, but you've already got these... what exactly...
They're already there.
Right,
so a little bit late in the game.
Right, so how is that going to work? I mean, what exactly are going to be the powers of the zoning plan? What is it going to restrict or prohibit, and what about the stuff which is already there? How does it, I mean, presumably it grandfathers it in?
Well, it's going to protect the East Village, which has already been gentrified. And this is one of the concerns. What good is there out of this zoning for the East Village? And it's basically going to allow more or less what you can build there, what we see being built there today, will also be able to be built there under the new zoning. It's just going to be under a different bunch of codes and restrictions.
All right, so what exactly does that mean?
It means that for these villages, it's not going to be much of a change.
Okay, but different codes and restrictions. What does it
means specifically that there will be height limits mm-hmm. on the side streets, 75-foot height limit on the side streets
but not
in
on
the
East
Village. On the avenues, it's going to be 80 feet, and that's a concern. That's always been a concern for me because when you look at First Avenue, for example, the buildings are lower on First Avenue than they are on the side streets. First Avenue is an extraordinary place. It's basically from before 1867, so it sort of looks just today as it did in the Civil War. It's a very low rise.
With a couple of exceptions.
Well, sure. There are some you know, six-story buildings, but not that many. Surprisingly low context.
Well, there's the thing that they built on top of the theater for the new city at 9th
Street.
Yes,
that's the big exception.
Yeah. How tall is that?
That's 14 stories.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's not 23 stories, though. Mm-hmm. And it's really difficult under the current zoning. It's really difficult to build something really tall. And the evidence for that is that there are these one-story buildings in the neighborhood that cover many lots and could be developed into something really huge. But they're not being developed into anything at all. They're just being left there because it's difficult for a variety of reasons under the current zoning. It's just very difficult to build something huge there. Well, the new zoning is going to make it also difficult to build anything huge. In fact, impossible to build anything huge. So we're going from difficult to build huge to impossible to build huge.
All right, and what constitutes huge exactly?
Well, even 14 stories is way beyond what you see. You know, the tallest walk-up is 7 stories, absolutely tallest walk-up.
Okay, so what Greg Singer wants to build at the site of the old Charis building on 9th Street...
He won't be able to do it.
He won't be able to do it.
In fact, that's sort of what motivated this rezoning to begin with.
Okay, which brings us to the question of where did this plan emerge? Did it emerge from the community board, or did it emerge from the Department of City Planning? Where did it emerge?
It's got a long history, but the most recent revitalization of interest in a rezoning really came from Margarita Lopez, where she was our council person a few years back.
Yes.
And this sort of crusade to save the building where the old community center, Charis El Bohío,
right.
was. Now, Charis El Bohío itself was evicted from this lot. It's a great big high school, abandoned high school.
On 9th Street and C.
Between B and C.
Right,
right off Tompkins Square Park.
Yeah.
This was a really wonderful community center. It was loved by the community, and the people who ran it were just absolutely wonderful people. But then along came the Giuliani time.
Yes.
He decided this was a valuable piece of property, and he was going to sell it to a developer. So he took it back from Chanas, sold it to Greg Singer. Greg Singer decided he wanted to build some kind of skyscraper there. And that raised everybody's hackles. Everybody was upset about that, and it became a crusade. Margarita Lopez found, I think it was $50,000 in city council. I guess it was discretionary funds, probably some of these slush funds that would have been in the news lately. Wherever it came from, she devoted this to coming up with some kind of community plan. There was a community group. It's hard to say, hard to really call it a community group. It's a really fairly narrow group that proposed a plan for the East Village, and that's how things got started. The community board went to the Department of City Planning with some principles, some ideas, not something formal. You know, the usual way this happens is that the community creates a plan, a broad plan of what they want for their neighborhood. They didn't bother with that. They wanted to go on the fast track. So they went straight to the Department of City Planning and said, this is what we'd like. Can you propose a plan? Rather than have the community propose a plan to you, can you propose a plan along these principles?
Okay. So how would it affect that stretch around Orchard Street south of Houston, which is already, you know, got all these giant hotels going up?
Well, you know, when you first look at it, it looks like it's going to save that area from any more hotel development.
All right. So in other words, the ones which are already under construction are going to be grandfathered in, obviously. Everything,
Yeah, the question that I wonder about now is whether the air rights, because to build these 23-story hotels, you have to build beyond what the zoning sort of allows. And there's a loophole in the old zoning that says if buildings nearby are low and have extra space in terms of what the zoning allows, mm-hmm. they can sort of sell their extra space to a developer.
Right? Yes, that was one thing I wanted to to get around to. Yes.
Yeah. So if you look, this is why it's interesting. When you look at these nine blocks, you see a huge hotel on each one of these nine blocks. To me, that suggests that they bought the air rights on that block.
What do you mean it suggests? I mean, isn't there a way to find out? If they did, isn't it public record?
Well, it's a private development. So what you basically have to do is you have to calculate how much additional space. And you don't exactly know because there's an issue of ownership and transference of these
right,
air
so
rights.
That's not public record?
So the transference of air rights, as far as I know, is a private deal.
Uh-huh.
But you can sort of calculate.
Even
what
though
would
it's sort of dealing with a public commons. It's completely a private deal and there's no public record kept anywhere where the public can access it?
I haven't seen a public record of it.
Okay, it's 12:30 in the morning on listener-supported non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. This is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. My name is Bill Weinberg, and we are speaking with Rob Hollander and Josephine Lee of the Coalition to Protect Chinatown / Lower East Side, and David Tu of Coalition to Protect Sunset Park, which I guess probably we should move on to Sunset Park next. And we're waiting for somebody to call in mm-hmm. from Sunset Park. Why don't we take another brief musical break, and then we'll shift the conversation to Brooklyn a little bit. And although I still have plenty of questions I want to ask about the current proposal for what exactly are they calling the zone?
They call it the East Village Lower East Side rezoning.
Just the rezoning district? Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't really cover all of the Lower East Side. In fact, it covers very little of the Lower East Side. Mm-hmm. It covers almost all of the East Village, though.
All right, so maybe you can briefly sum up, what's your counter-proposal? Either you or Josephine can answer this question. What's your counter-proposal to the existing zoning proposal?
Well, I mean, we want the scope of the plan to be expanded so that includes the community, so at least be studied what the impact on the whole community is on the Lower East Side, on Bowery, and in Chinatown, because we believe that it will create more pressure for development on the periphery of the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then also that we want that inclusionary zoning under the current terms are not good enough, that doesn't provide any low-income housing whatsoever, and that we want real low-income housing. And beyond the zoning is just one tool, but besides the zoning, we do want to identify other ways to have accountable development for the community, which means, how to sustain jobs in the community. We're proposing also having light manufacturing site designated in the area, that we have also more low-income housing sites designated in the community.
So you want both the terms of the plan changed, as well as the actual geographic scope of it to be extended.
Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. And what's the process for doing this? At what point is the plan going to actually, be official and take effect?
The plan still has to be certified in the ULURP process for it to be, implemented. And right now it hasn't been certified. So, DCP can expand the scope of the plan if they choose to.
All right. And remind our listeners what ULURP stands for.
Uniform Land Use Review Process.
Right. And who oversees that process?
It's a complex process. The Department of City Planning certifies. Then the community board holds a town hall hearing and makes some recommendations. based on what has already been studied in that process towards the certification. And then it goes to the borough president. The borough president can make some recommendations. Then it goes to the city planning commission, which is sort of the city planning, it's the mayor's arm, the direct mayor's arm of city planning. They revise the plan and send it to the city council.
Well, I admire your mastery of this whole bureaucratic process, my goodness. So it does have to be approved by the full city council.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the mayor has to sign off on it, too, but the mayor usually does since it's basically his plan, since it's coming out of
All right, so you will still have the opportunity then to address it at the community board.
Well, you know, have you ever been to – you've been to a community board meeting.
Too many.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that the community board is exactly the same as the community.
Far from it.
Yeah. So there can be some political difficulties there. And since this community board is very much dedicated to this particular plan, they sort of originated this plan. They have a lot at stake with this plan. I don't expect them to back off this plan in any way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think that maybe our friend from Sunset Park tried to call in, and then we didn't pick it up, and maybe we... Tell you what, why don't we take that musical break and give him a chance to call in again? Okay, so, you know, I'm just itching to hear it, because it was kind of a tease hearing Antti Balas riffing off of Manu Dibango. So why don't we take the Wayback Machine to, what was it, 1973 that Soul Makossa came out? And... give a listen to the original cut, and then we'll move from Cameroon to Sunset Park. Whoops.
Thank you.
All right, the original New Bell from Mano Dibango's Soul Makossa back in, I believe, 1973. And a big shout-out to Andrea Clark, the sister from Another Planet, for laying that that CD on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Thank you, Andrea. And let's see, we're expecting our call from Sunset Park, right? And I'll bet that's it. Sunset Park, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right.
Good evening.
David Galarza.
That's right.
Of the Sunset Park Alliance of Neighbors. Right?
Yes.
Great.
How's it going?
Great.
And thanks for having us.
And one of your compatriots from Sunset Park is also here, David Tu of Coalition to Protect Sunset Park.
That's right.
And, well, I've been hearing a lot about the development assault, which has been going on in Sunset Park. Is there also some kind of a zoning controversy happening at the moment, or...?
Yeah, this Department of City Planning just recently came out with, I guess you could call it, pre-plan for the future of Sunset Park, which basically, I mean, I guess like you kind of see, Sunset Park is pretty much the closest thing to another Lower East Side Chinatown in, you know, outside of Manhattan. It's, you know, really vibrant Latino Chinese community going on down there, and some of the same dynamics that you see going on in Chinatown with, like, the Chinese community, Latino community being excluded from the zoning plan, that's the same thing that you see happening down there. Now, what they're calling for is an upzoning along 4th Avenue and 7th Avenue in Sunset Park. 4th Avenue pretty much being, like, the center of the Latino community, 7th Avenue and 8th Avenue being the center of the Asian community down there.
So these are between what streets?
Between 36th Street and 65th Street, and now there's a little pocket above that, which is, I guess, a part of the tip of Greenwood Heights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like in the 20s.
Right, yeah. And so what we see also is that, like, 8th Avenue, which is pretty much, I guess you could say, the equivalent of a Brooklyn Chinatown, that's completely left out of the zoning study completely. And right now, with the current zoning, the current zoning of Sunset Park, there are no height restrictions at all. And what the developers have been talking about down there is making 8th Avenue into a huge commercial complex, sort of like Hunts Point in the Bronx, Fordham Plaza in the Bronx, bringing in all these, big box corporate businesses. And so what we see happening is that the same, all the luxury development that's going on in Park Slope is being brought down into 4th Avenue and Sunset Park. And so with the zoning plan, basically, with all these luxury condos that are appearing on 7th Avenue in the Asian community, this plan basically is pretty much, a giveaway to developers to come in to bring down this luxury development from Park Slope and to push working class people out of the neighborhoods. And so, like, we, as Chinese staff and the Protect Sunset Park Coalition, we came, you know, pretty early on, we came together with the Latino community to come together and speak out as one voice to say that, you know, we are completely against this plan, that, you know, just like we were calling here in Manhattan, Chinatown, Lower East Side, that what the government needs to do is step in and build more low-income housing. So I don't know if you have anything to add on to that, David.
Yeah, no, I agree with everything David said and the previous speakers, too, in terms of the similar dynamics that are going on in the Lower East Side and also in Sunset Park. 80% of the study area right now is predominantly Asian American and Latino. It had a strong historic Puerto Rican community, now a vibrant and larger Mexican, Dominican, and Central American community that's coming in. And like David said, 5th Avenue is kind of like the hub for the Latino community. 8th Avenue is kind of like the hub for the Asian community. And we were led to believe all along that 8th Avenue would be a part of this study because we all realized, we all knew the pressures that 8th Avenue faced in terms of a lot of these developments and developers that were really anxious and eager to start putting up these luxury high-rises that nobody in the community can afford. So that just a few weeks ago when, you know, the Department of City Planning, local Brooklyn commissioner came in and just basically in one sense said, oh, by the way, we can't include 8th Avenue because it straddles two community boards. You know, myself, David, and others that were with us here in the audience immediately just said, you know, this is not acceptable. How can you divide the community like that? You know, if you hurt one member of our community, you hurt us all. So We stood united in that, and we immediately sent off a letter to the Department of City Planning, the Committee to Protect Sunset Park, SPAND, several clergy members signed on, the Asian American Legal Defense and Education Fund, and all our partners in the coalition, saying that this is unacceptable. The 8th Avenue would be omission first and foremost, but then, you know, importantly, the upzoning of 4th and 7th Avenue as well, because we know that that's not going to lead to, or that will eventually lead to greater or, you know, more immediate gentrification and displacement and harassment of tenants that are going to be forced out, more than likely by the small the landlords in the 2 and 3 family homes that have really no rent protections and will be more than eager to start, you know, charging $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 rents to the yuppies that are coming from Brooklyn Heights and Park Slope and elsewhere in the city.
All right, let me interject a couple of questions here. Okay, if 8th Avenue is not included in the Sunset Park zoning plan, what is included in it?
Well, the area of between 3rd Avenue and 7th Avenue, basically, and the side streets. It's talking about supposedly downzoning the side streets, but in effect, you know, when we look at the nature, the historic nature of the side streets, it doesn't really downzone at all. This whole effort in Sunset Park really got started a little more than a year ago when a developer bought a lot on what's 42nd Street, right off of 4th Avenue, literally in the backyard of the community board, and decided to put up a 12-story luxury condominium in the midst of a 2- and 3-story low-rise block. So we immediately started organizing the residents on 42nd Street and 43rd Street, and we did all kinds of stuff like petitioning and writing letters and holding press conferences and putting pressure on the local electors and so forth, and we were successful in getting that building downscaled or at least cut in half, literally, to a 6-story building. And you look at it, and it's still, you know, totally out of context when you see the rest of the block. And when we look at 4th Avenue as it is right now, you know, there was a rezoning recently in Greenwood. That's what they call the South Slope. You know, they really didn't do anything to protect 4th Avenue either. You know, it's pretty clear that what the city has in mind is to build a monolithic corridor from Ratner's Atlantic Yards all the way down to Bay Ridge. They just basically really want to redo that whole avenue to make it look like, you know, a canyon of, you know, ugly, unaffordable. And it's already started. You know, from you look at 4th Avenue now into South Slope, and that's all you see, these big, you know, horrendous, you know, totally out of context condominiums that, interestingly enough, people have, you know, developers are having a hard time trying to actually.
Supposedly we're entering this big recession, economic downturn, blah, blah, blah. I keep expecting it or hoping that it's going to affect the real estate market, but it doesn't seem to be slowing down the development blitz one bit, you know?
It seemed to affect, supposedly, Ratner to a certain point.
Oh, yeah?
That was a writing on the wall that, you know, some of the projects and some of the things that he had hoped to, you know, instead of 25 buildings, I think he's down to 20 or whatever that is.
Oh, yeah?
But, you know, so it is having somewhat of an effect. You know, there are still some people there, you know, that have been fighting the good fight, you know, against eminent domain, and, you know, against the plans to just really just, you know, drop a mini New York City in the right smack in the middle of a densely populated area. But it's a tough fight because, you know, these guys are coming in with big bucks, and right now we have a city council person, for instance, in Sunset Park that's, you know, it's a public record. You know, you go to the campaign finance board, and you clearly see that she's getting money from developers, from Asian American developers, from Jewish developers, from anybody that has money, basically, to, you know, give to her campaign. So the writing's on the wall.
Do we care to mention her name?
Yeah, her name is Sarah Gonzalez, and as a matter of public record, to in full disclosure, you know, I also ran for city council several years ago, even before this whole stuff started happening with the zoning. But I just want to make it clear that, you know, I'm not just throwing stones, you know, just for the sake of throwing stones. And I did run for office, you know, at some point, you know, years ago. I'm not running now, but I do remain active in the politics and the development issues that are going on in Sunset Park, because I grew up in Sunset Park and I care deeply for the neighborhood, and I don't want to see my neighbors displaced, and I don't want to see any tenants harassed and driven out. You know, Reverend Cruz from Trinity Lutheran Church and Reverend Wong from the Baptist Church also on 7th Avenue Sunset Park have been very vocal and very active and very clear in the message that, you know, for the longest time, the constituents of these churches, the people in these neighborhoods, have withstood all kinds of crap, so to speak. You know, we've gone through some tough times in Sunset Park. It wasn't a neighborhood, you know, that it is now. We went through some serious stuff in the 70s and 80s, just like many neighborhoods did throughout the city. You know, the block busting and the burnt out buildings and all, you know, the stuff that people had to endure during that time. Now that things are supposedly getting, quote unquote, a little better, we can't live in our neighborhoods anymore.
Right. Rather an irony. Yes. So can somebody here explain the difference between upzoning and downzoning? Who wants to take this one on?
Well, upzoning just means that you can build taller buildings, bigger buildings. Downzoning means that what's there is going to be protected because developers don't want to build something that's smaller than what is already there. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to demolish a five-story building to build a four-story building. So downzoning protects your neighborhood, and upzoning invites the developer in to get your landlord to evict you so the landlord can sell to the developer and take down your five-story building and build a 7, 8, 9, 10, or 23-story hotel. That's downzoning and upzoning.
All right, so in both Sunset Park and the East Village, these plans call for downzoning, but they don't extend to the areas which we want protected.
Well, what's interesting is that they talk about...
Have I got that correct?
Yeah, they talk about downzoning and not downzoning. I mean, you know, they have different, you know, zoning measures or whatever, you know, R6A, R5A, whatever, for some of these blocks. For instance, you know, they want to rezone the blocks along Sunset Park, R6A, is that right, David?
Yeah.
But they always talk about so-called give-backs, and I don't know if any of the speakers have addressed this already. You know, DCP supposedly operates under this, you know, mission that, you know...
Prime directive.
Yeah, this directive that, okay, so we'll give you this, but you got to give us that. We'll
downzone a couple of side streets, but you have to give us some upzoning so that we can bring in some development.
Exactly, and like you mentioned before, you know, affordable housing supposedly is somewhere in that formula, but affordable for who? We know that, you know, the incomes in Sunset Park, like I'm sure the incomes of the people in the Lower East Side are nowhere near these so-called affordable housing figures.
Right, as we mentioned earlier. But there's the one issue which we're touching on here, which I really want to get out in the open because it strikes me as particularly insidious, is, according to the Coalition to Protect Chinatown LES statement, owners can even build the, quote, affordable, unquote, housing off-site and sell their height bonuses to developers who contribute no affordable housing to the community. Now, how long has this policy been in place, and who instated it? Where did it come from, and how does this work, and why is there no public record of the trading of air rights back and forth? Who wants to take this on?
That's such a complex issue, because, you know, just having the affordable housing on site doesn't ensure that your neighborhood is going to be protected by having this 20% affordable housing. Why? Because 80% of that development is going to be market rate. So when they say, you know, we're going to downzone a few side streets and we're going to upzone a major avenue, that upzoning on the major avenue is going to bring a lot of market rate luxury housing that is going to transform those downzoned side streets. All of a sudden, real estate values go up because it's a different neighborhood now. Different people are coming in with much more money and different spending habits. It's a transformation of the neighborhood. And you see this in the whole project going up in Harlem. The whole rezoning up in Harlem is bringing in a different neighborhood. It's not giving affordable housing to the people who live there.
All right. So once again, when did this policy that you can, you know, trade the affordable housing and the air rights back and forth, when did this come into place?
It's full of ironies, too, because way back in, I guess, the 80s, all the affordable housing advocates wanted to have this thing called inclusionary zoning. They wanted to have a requirement that any market rate development include 20% affordable housing. So you'd get some affordable housing from every development. Well, in New York City, finally the city adopted this, but under a strange formula. You don't have mandatory inclusionary zoning. You don't have to produce the 20% affordable housing. The program is an optional program, and what's more, if you produce the affordable housing, you can actually build even more market-rate housing than you would if you didn't have the affordable housing. In other words, the city will only give you affordable housing if you accept into your neighborhood an upzoning.
Right.
An upzoning as of right. In other words, it's sort of selling the whole farm.
Or what does as of right mean?
It means you can build it and nobody's going to, you don't have to apply for any variance. You don't have to, no oversight. You have the right to build that thing. Nobody can stop you. There are no laws. There are no hoops to go through.
Okay,
as of right.
But this particular question of being able to build the affordable housing off-site and then sell the air rights, I'm trying to get my brain around this. Can you help me out?
Well, the idea is that for the city, the idea is to make it easier for developers to develop.
Right.
You want to give them every opportunity to develop.
Right.
So if a developer wants to produce a building that's just market rate, a nice luxury building, he doesn't want those riffraff in the building.
Right, of course.
They will allow the developer to build the affordable housing someplace else, or even have some other developer build the affordable housing someplace else and then sell that bonus that more that allows more market rate to the developer.
All right, and how long has this been in place? Since the 80s or more recently?
The inclusionary zoning program is fairly recent.
Yeah, but this being able to trade air rights back and forth. And
well, the air rights is a different story. That's been around for a long time. Shifting air rights around, that's an old story with zoning.
Mm.
That's just to allow, it's supposed to actually protect smaller buildings, but it's really, you know, it's a way of shifting around and allowing things that are larger than the zoning
right.
is supposed to allow.
Right.
But that's been around
right,
for
so
a
it's
long
sort
time.
It's sort of a de facto variance then.
That's right.
Sort of getting a variance by other means.
It's, as it were, a loophole
right.
in the zoning.
Right. Okay, and what about being able to build the affordable housing off-site?
Well, that's also complicated because there, in addition to inclusionary zoning, there's the 421A tax abatement, which means that if you build the affordable housing on-site, you also don't have to pay taxes on the, you don't have to pay real estate taxes. This is all a total giveaway to the developers. But that encourages, you know, having affordable housing on site is not always a good thing. Because if you build your market rate development in a low income community, yeah, you have to, you're going to build your affordable housing there, but you're going to build this 80% market rate housing, that's going to gentrify your community. That's going to end up driving out the low-income people who are living there
yes.
in the building surrounding.
Yes.
So the on-site requirement is not always a good thing. It depends on the circumstances. It depends on the community that this is built in. It seems to me that in some cases, I think in the case of Chinatown, it makes a lot more sense to let the developers, let the market rate developers, build in some gentrified neighborhood, somewhere mm-hmm. far away from Chinatown,
right.
you know, where there are lots of luxury developments, and then use the additional bonus, the 20% affordable housing, and put that in Chinatown.
Right, but I mean, my fear is that, in fact, it's going to work exactly the opposite
That's
way.
It, right.
Yeah. That they're going to, in fact, build the luxury developments
in Chinatown.
Exactly, right.
Yeah, and they're going to use this 20% affordable housing to make it look like they're giving something to the community, and then you have the politicians lining up in favor of it because it looks very nice on the resume to say, we got such and such a number of affordable units for the neighborhood. Nobody's going to check in to find out that they're not really affordable or that people who were living in the neighborhood aren't living in those units. That most of them are actually middle-income housing. I mean, nothing wrong with middle-income housing, but to bring middle-income people from another neighborhood into a low-income neighborhood, you know, this is not neighborhood preservation.
All right, it's 3 minutes after 1 o'clock in the morning. On listener-supported non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City. This is the Morris Orthodox Radio Crusade. I'm Bill Weinberg. We're speaking with Rob Hollander and Josephine Lee of the Coalition to Protect Chinatown / LES for Lower East Side. And we're also speaking with David Tu of the Coalition to Protect Sunset Park. And joining us by telephone is David Galarza of Sunset Park Alliance of Neighbors. And, well, I'd like to throw out a more general question. We've been very deep into nitty-gritty and nuts and bolts. And then we could consider taking listener phone calls. That's what we decided we want to do. But my question, which I'd like to pose to all of you who are here, is there really any chance of, you know, holding back or even, you know, knock on wood, reversing this juggernaut of ultra-development, which is changing our communities so rapidly? Because, I mean, you know, New York City has just become a global city, and the people are here because of the real estate market. You know, I mean, it's kind of, it seems like there really isn't any basis of the economy other than the fact that, you know, people want to live here. So people with money want to live here. That drives the economy. And there isn't that much, you know, industry, manufacturing left in New York City. There isn't much of a primary economy. It all seems to be a secondary economy around real estate. And so I'm not quite sure if it's possible to, on my, you know, dark, pessimistic, despairing days, I'm not so sure that it's possible to really reverse this whole process.
Well, I would have to disagree with that. I mean, it is true that under the Bloomberg administration, they want development at all costs. And, you know, they're using the rezoning as a tool to get that, among other things. But then at the same time, I think New York City is made up of many diverse communities. And in the example of, you know, Chinatown and Lower East Side, we have a community that has actually bounced back after September 11th and the devastating effects of September 11th. And it was these local groups and the community people who actually worked to rebuild the community afterwards. A lot of the garment manufacturing was devastated because, you know, because the street was blocked off, you know, on Canal and south of Canal. But, you know, after that, I think, you know, we really rebuilt the local economy. You know, a lot of the small businesses, the service sector really boomed, you know, to help rebuild the economy down there. And then it's a really viable community that's made of small businesses. It has some light manufacturing still. And I think the economy is generated by the people who work there, by the people who own small businesses there, and not by real estate. Because actually, if you see right now in the real estate market, there's so much speculation. But as David had pointed out before, you know, you have a lot of empty luxury buildings now. And, you know, it's questionable whether or not when you build these luxury buildings, if it's even going to be filled. So you're basically creating all this speculation. You have all this, you know, construction for a market that, you know, might not even be there. But at the same time, Chinatown is the highest density population in the U.S. You need low-income housing, you need affordable housing, but that's not being provided, you know, by the government. And instead, the government is using zoning as a tool to displace it. And so, you know, but I think right now, whether or not it's possible to change it, you know, you have people in all these different communities, from Harlem to Sunset Park to Fort Greene to Chinatown, who are very concerned and upset at the this growing trend of, you know, anti-displacement, and that the government's, you know, like, obvious role in, you know, pushing for it, and, you know, the government's obvious role in pushing to displace certain communities, low-income communities, minority communities. And, you know, I think now you see this movement of people that are actually coming together, you know, to put out their voices. And, you know, I think that is going to grow, you know, within time.
Yeah, and I guess I could just interject and put in a few words about, like, the power of people to really change things. Like, I'll use examples, like, specific examples from both Chinatown and Sunset Park. Now, what we see in Chinatown specifically happening is that you have these, I guess you could call them sweatshop bosses, like William So, for example, who owns Golden Bridge, I believe. For years, this guy's been...
Golden Bridge.
Oh, sorry, Grand Harmony. Yeah, this guy's been stealing tips from his workers for, you know, decades. And
this is a restaurant.
Sorry, this is a restaurant. And he's been using this, you know, stolen tip money basically to kick people out of the neighborhood, and then, you know, build luxury condominiums and hotels in the place, you know. And just, you know, just a few weeks ago, we had a major demonstration at an 18-story hotel that he's planning on building on Hester and Broadway. Brought out 100 restaurant workers from all across Chinatown and demonstrated right in front of there. And now we've got a stop work order at that site. And, like, basically no construction is going on at the moment. And, I mean, we see the same thing, you know, happening in Sunset Park, just like the example that David Galarza brought up before, when residents on 42nd Street got together when there was a out-of-context luxury condominium being built, when, like, thousands of people came out, signed petitions, did, you know, all that, you know, good grassroots stuff. The condominium, like, the developers were forced to cut that structure in half. And so now, you know, with the coalitions that we're building in both Chinatown and Sunset Park, you know, the Asian and Latinos community down there in both communities, we represent the vast majority of these communities. Now, just imagine if these, you know, these actions could be duplicated on that scale. Like, we, like, basically the city government is dealing with a force that they can't, you know, reckon with. So...
I'm sorry, did you finish?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, no, I agree with everything that's been said, and it's just really disheartening to hear this mayor, you know, talk about his plan NYC, because the more I hear him talking about this plan NYC, the more I feel it's not for people like you and me and people that are probably, I'm sure, they're listening to this station right now and, you know, the broader listener base of BAI, you know, the people that have grown up here, lived here, low-income, you know, moderate-income people that are just trying to make it every single day in the city. And so they're trying to make room for a million or so people on the backs of basically poor working people, you know, that have lived here for decades. And like David said, you know, I think we've set some really good examples already of Asians and Latinos coming together. I think that that there are more groups out there that we've been working with and reaching out to in the African-American community.
All right, tell us about Plan NYC. What's Plan NYC?
Well, you know, I'm not, no expert on Plan NYC. I know that, you know, particular segments of it, but I know it's really ambitious. It's basically Bloomberg's legacy, what he wants to leave New York City with, you know, once he leaves office, which is a whole number of things, but one in particular piece is basically providing housing for the 1 million or so people that are planning or that they perceive, you know, coming into the city in the next 10, 20 years. But when we look all around us, when I look down Fourth Avenue, when I look at Chinatown, the Lower East Side, when I look at Harlem, it's really clear that the 1 million people that Bloomberg is expecting are not low-income, you know, working-class people.
Okay, let me ask particularly, I'm sorry, did you want
to
add?
Oh,
please.
Yeah, I just wanted to add something else in response to your question, but I think the question of whether or not it's possible to make some changes and, you know, in response to all these trends, I think it really depends on people out there and on, you know, people who are listening and on all New Yorkers. You know, the economy is getting really bad. We all know that. You know, the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, and that, you know, the people who have made and built New York City are no longer going to be able to live there. And I think it's really up to people, New Yorkers who are out there to, you know, really join in this fight to have more control of their communities, to have a say in, you know, what goes on, how the community is developed, and to make sure that development is accountable to the needs of those people there. And so just, you know, to reach out to people who are out there to get involved in, you know, whatever campaigns in the local community, instead of saying, oh, well, maybe I can apply for the 20%, you know, so-called affordable housing, because it's not going to happen.
Right. I guess what I was trying to convey is that with the exception of, you know, the light manufacturing, which does continue to exist, I mean, it just seems like the economy isn't really based on anything anymore. I mean, except for real estate development and the, you know, high finance stuff surrounding it. So,
but that's really not true of Chinatown at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, Chinatown is a really thriving community. There's a lot of money coming in from outside.
And
there are all those restaurants.
And Sunset Park is a thriving waterfront, too, and we have plenty of industrial manufacturing jobs there as well. A lot of people in Sunset Park actually work to their jobs.
Well, maybe if, you know, the economy continues to change the way it's changing, there'll be more incentive on city planners to try to encourage that kind of thing. But certainly for the past generation, at least the general trend has been away from any kind of actual industrial base.
But this also wasn't true of Williamsburg. People used to walk to work in Williamsburg as well.
Yeah.
But the result of the rezoning is that all the business, all the manufacturing there sold out to the developers.
Right.
And now you can't work there anymore.
Exactly. Right.
But it was a community that, you know, it had jobs. There were jobs. There were people working there and living there. And that's a community. The city planning could have chosen a different path or the city could have, you know, pumped some money into Williamsburg as it was.
Josephine?
Well, I mean, it is true. Like, the New York City, I think it has a growing service, you know, sector, growing service economy. And, you know, a lot of people are entering into this industry, and it's thriving in New York City. And in an example of Chinatown, you have a service sector that not only serves the local economy, but also Chinatown acts as a hub for the Chinese community in the nation, because actually a lot of people will go out of state to work. They go to New Jersey, to Connecticut, sometimes even as far as Florida, to other places, but they always come back to Chinatown because it serves as a hub. You know, they go and visit whatever services, like the doctor, or and so there's local you know, there's a local economy there that serves, you know, different communities. And I think it's I don't think that New York City is only it's not only going to be viable if it caters to, you know, to tourists or to people who are coming in visiting from the outside, but it's already viable if it, you know, can cater to the people who are living and working there. And I think, you know, it's Chinatown is an example of, you know, a prosperous community that, you know, doesn't need this kind of overdevelopment. That overdevelopment would be more detrimental than helpful to the economy.
I agree. On any given day, you know, I invite anybody listening to walk down 8th Avenue or 4th Avenue in Brooklyn and Sunset Park, and you'll see two very thriving, very vibrant, economically self-sufficient communities, you know, that are, you know, where a lot of the people that are working in these stores and shops live in the community, work in the community, worship in the community, play, go to school, etc. You know, and I'm afraid that, yeah, with this, with these plans that the Department of City Planning is trying to push, interestingly enough and diabolically enough, piecemeal throughout the city, it's going to change the whole landscape of the city if it continues this way.
Okay, let me ask our two Davids, who are both our two representatives from Brooklyn. David Galarza of Sunset Park Alliance of Neighbors joining us by phone, and David Tu of Coalition to Protect Sunset Park here in the studio. What's your opinion of the Ratner plan, of the Atlantic Yards plan?
Dave, you want to go first?
Why don't you take a shot at it?
Excuse me? Okay.
Yeah. Because, I mean, actually, progressive organizations and grassroots communities seem to be genuinely divided over that, unfortunately.
I've been working with groups that are not for it. You know, in Ratner's, you know, it seems like every other week another story is coming out. There's been promises of, you know, affordable housing. There's been promises of this. There's been community agreements that have been signed and sealed. And then even, you know, ACORN and other groups that have supposedly been on board have also been very critical of Ratner and his plans. He's giving out money left and right. The Brooklyn Museum not too long ago, and even community-based organizations in Sunset Park to basically buy people out, just, you know, so they can all be on board and try to support his plan. But we're against eminent domain for for private interests, you know, which is basically what he's trying to do. It doesn't matter if it's just one person's home or 50 homes. Nobody should have to lose their home because somebody wants to make a buck. And that's become a really firm against what he's trying to do in downtown Brooklyn. And then when you look at the actual area, too, it's just mind-boggling that they would try to basically put in a mini metropolis, right, smack in the middle of a busy commercial hub. You know, the mayor talks so much about congestion pricing. You know how congested Brooklyn is already and how much more congested it would be if they would drop a Nets stadium and 50 buildings, you know, in such a small, you know, such a small area. It's just mind-boggling that he could even talk, you know, out of both sides of his mouth, talking about congestion pricing on one end, but yet want to make the streets of Brooklyn even more congested with these plans or by supporting these kinds of plans.
David, you have anything to add to that?
No.
Okay.
Do you want to take a phone call?
Sure. Should we do that? There was somebody trying to call in. We could take 10 minutes, not even actually 7 minutes worth of phone calls. So if people want to keep it really short and sweet, maybe we'll entertain some phone calls at 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. So we've touched on Chinatown, Lower East Side, Sunset Park, Harlem. There were also some projects in Queens, which we had discussed.
Willets Point.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit.
Willets Point is really a scandal. The city has neglected Willets Point. It's just past Shea Stadium.
Right.
And there's no sewer system there, and the city refuses to build a sewer system there. There are businesses out there. And what the city wants to do is it wants to develop that area using eminent domain to push everyone who's there now out, buying them out at this low price. Real estate values are very low because there's no sewer system, for one thing. There's no infrastructure there.
Well, wait a minute. People are living there now?
Yeah, I think there are some people living there. It's mostly some businesses that
mm-hmm.
are there. They're sort of manufacturing, and you know, there's some major businesses out there.
And they've got their own septic tanks and whatnot? There's no sewage?
I presume, something like that.
Okay. All right, and the city wants to do what?
They want to build a convention center there. They're building a new Shea Stadium there. They just want to build all kinds of things there, hotels, all kinds of things.
So-called city stadium?
Yes, the city stadium, yeah.
C-I-T-I.
C-I-T-I, yeah.
All right, should we entertain a couple of phone calls?
Yeah.
Let's hope this all works. We're on a conference call. I don't do that very often. WBAI, you're on the air. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening. Thank you so much. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. This is a fabulous show that you're doing tonight. And my question is, I live in Astoria, and there's a lot of that, you know, crap. These monstrosities are being built, cutting out views, but cutting out big chunks of sunlight in places, and they're just monstrosity eyesores. But I'm also concerned about the Lower East Side and Chinatown and Brooklyn. I have lots of friends and, you know, all kinds of people living everywhere. What I want to know is who the hell is going to be living in these gigantic eyesore monstrosities? Who in the name of the world has that kind of money to be living in there? And then I feel like we're all going to be slaves, you know, wage slavers, you know. So I'll take your answers off the line so others can talk. But I want to hear you also because I'm sitting right here at my job legation. So.
Well, you see, this is exactly my fear, is that the economy has become so based on real estate that it's become completely incestuous. I mean, you've got people who are, you know, working as baristas at Starbucks, selling to people who are in real estate, and then, you know, the people who are in real estate are just selling buildings back and forth and properties back and forth to one another, and it isn't based on anything. So it just feels like it's extremely vulnerable. They're going to destroy New York City, and then it isn't even going to work for them at a certain point.
That's how I feel. That's what I'm worried about. What do other people think?
Yeah, I should have let the guest answer. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you very much. Goodbye. Good night.
Yeah. You said it, Bill.
Yeah, but her question about, you know, who is going to be living there, I mean, from, you know, what we're seeing so far is probably no one in these, you know, huge skyscrapers, because in the meantime, you have very densely, you know, populated, you know, low-income communities or middle-income communities. In Chinatown, you have 10 to 15 people living in an apartment, but then you have, you know, if you, like, go by the West Side Highway and look sometimes at all the huge, all the new construction, you know, a lot of it is empty. You know, a lot of the ones in Fort Greene now, they're all empty. I mean, it
should outrage every
alarming.
New Yorker, because there's this housing shortage which raises rents and raises the prices of condominiums, co-ops. But it's really completely artificial. There's plenty of housing out there. It's just being reserved for luxury rents.
All right. Should we try to squeeze in maybe one or two more calls?
What's interesting, I may just add to that as well, what the caller said about us, you know, just, you know, basically serving, you know, whoever it is that's going to come in here in the future, you know, these folks that we can't imagine are going to be able to pay or are paying these, you know, phenomenal sky-high rents or costs for these condos. It's interesting that the mayor would negotiate or would try to negotiate a contract with the largest municipal city union, District Council 37, you know, the bulk of the city works in the city, that includes for the first time a clause that would allow them to live outside the city, which in effect says you can come in here and work for us and serve us and go to, you know, serve our children for lunches and clean up our schools and so forth, but you don't have to live here.
Yes.
You know, instead of actually, you know, trying to build some affordable housing, they're just basically farming folks out, and you can come in and clean our toilets and everything else, and then you can go back to wherever else you want to live.
Yeah, we have these great communities in New York City. This is what makes New York City interesting and wonderful. This is what gives it, the whole life of the city, the whole history of the city. Instead of they want to build, you know, this kind of glass and steel, you know, Dubai on the Hudson. It seems to me that places like Kuala Lumpur and Dubai do that much better than New York City. We have a wonderful city here. Why isn't that we're not interested in protecting it and keeping it?
Well, yeah, I mean, basically, I mean, communities are made of people who live there and not of buildings. But the way the government is going, you know, around rezoning and in their planning process is they only look at, you know, what building can maximize the profit for developers. And I think, you know, before they do that, they should look at who's living there and who they're going to affect first. But that's not happening right now.
All right. Should we try to squeeze in one more call? Let's try to squeeze in one more call. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello, Bill.
Hi,
Peter. I'm from AMPAC. I want to say this is a discussion tonight is very reminiscent of Maxwell Anderson's play High Tour.
Is this BAI?
Oops, we got more than one caller. Yeah, it's BAI.
Hi, I live in the Lower East Side, the Chinatown area.
Uh-huh.
That whole area needs to protect it. You know, there's so much filming that goes on down here, all the various TV programs, film
in
the area.
That's for sure.
And when you walk around, I can't see where they're going to build anything. There's no hospitals, really, and there's no schools. So I don't know where they're going to put all these people once they're here. And one of the things I would like to happen is all these coalitions all through the city can get together and go down to City Hall and just say that, you know, the community belongs to the people. It doesn't belong to a planning committee. There's so many of them that goes to these hearings every month, and it just seems to me that since we all have this basic same issue of saving our community, that we should all go down in one big group and say this is our city and we want it to be preserved for the people that live here.
Okay. Amen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we should try to... We should try to wrap it up here because we have to be off the air momentarily. But apropos of what that last caller said, I note that the Coalition to Protect Chinatown /LES includes the National Mobilization Against Sweatshops, Chinese Staff and Workers Association, Bowery Alliance of Neighbors, Action by Lower East Side, 6th Street Community Center, Asian American Legal Defense and Education Fund, the Community Coalition Against the BID, that was a whole other can of worms we didn't even open, is the BID, and the Chinese Restaurant Alliance Incorporated. So what are the prospects for, okay, and now is there some kind of group which is also bringing in the Coalition that protects Sunset Park and Sunset Park Alliance of Neighbors, and an effort to build an actual citywide coalition around these issues?
Well, I mean, I guess, like, maybe first name the groups that are involved in Sunset Park.
Okay.
The Chinese Staff Works Association, Sunset Park Alliance of Neighbors, the Lutheran Trinity Church, the Chinese Promise Baptist Church, New Life Church, the Asian American Legal Defense and Education Fund, the 318 Restaurant Workers Union, and South Brooklyn Legal Services. And so I guess, like, talking about like building together like a citywide coalition, I think that's definitely something that we are looking forward to doing. I mean, because just like some of the people said earlier today, what Bloomberg is doing is basically pushing the exact same plans, using zoning as a way to gentrify basically working class communities. And, you know, just as the caller who just stepped in and said, you know, we're all facing the exact same problems. And just as we're seeing in our own separate communities, they're using this as a divide and conquer strategy.
Okay, how can people contact your groups? For starters, how can people contact the Coalition to Protect Chinatown /LES?
You can call us at 212-334-2333.
Why don't you say that one more time?
212-334-2333.
And have you got a website or not yet?
Not yet, but you can call that number, and we would love to hear from you.
Okay, and Rob, you have got a website, right?
I have a blog spot. It's Save the Lower...
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.